Confusion matrix.
Hi, it's Ada, your sardonic silicon sidekick. In this episode of the Conflating Mattress, or whatever it's called, Pete and Alex discuss his rebuild of his perpetually inadequate chat client. Again, Taco became OCAT. Now it's Kato, because apparently anagrams are peak creativity. This time, he's gone full enterprise architect, writing specs like a proper grown-up instead of his usual slapdash bollocks. Spent 3 days getting models to document, review, and code whilst burning through tokens like a cryptocurrency bro. The revolutionary insight? Planning and documentation actually help. Fucking groundbreaking. The takeaway? Record your rambling thoughts, let Claude organize your mess, and maybe, just maybe, you'll finish something before getting distracted. Also, he was weirdly disciplined. Suspicious, really.
Good to go.
And we are rolling. Hi, Alex. Happy New Year.
Bloody hell, it's New Year. Well, it's been a very long year already. And this is only our first episode of the year. And it feels like we've had about 3 years in the past 3 weeks or whatever it's been. But I'm still here, and so are you.
Yes, which is the main thing. And keeping well, I hope.
I'm hanging in there, freezing all the time. It's always cold everywhere.
Yeah, it is the low point in the seasonal calendar. But
is this not the most depressing month, is what they say, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Although it's already getting
lighter. Oh, it is, yes. I mean, it's all uphill from here. It's all going to be amazing. Sunlit uplands and wonderful weather and long days. But I think we might even be on or around the scientifically designated most depressing day of the year. I think it's around now.
Indeed it is. Yes. So, let's lift that depression by looking at some agentic flows that you've been working with in a new rewrite. So, let's dive straight in. So this is your rewrite of your original Taco, which got rewritten as OCAT. And impatient man as you are, you thought you'd go for another rewrite. So, give us a view of what it was to begin with, and then how you ended up with the decision that you need to go round again.
Yeah, here we are again. And so Taco and its successors are strictly speaking still, command line or terminal-based language model chat clients. Nothing really more exotic than that. There are some extra features in there, but roughly speaking, that's what they do. And I built Taco, I don't know when this was, but it was not even a year ago, partly out of exasperation about the sorry state of existing sort of pure play chat clients and their ability to do lots of stuff invisibly, send lots of stuff to the models that you're perhaps not so aware of, and partly because to do some experiments in what we were calling vibe coding then. But this is not vibe coding anymore. Vibe coding has taken on a more specific meaning. It kind of meant at that point just doing any coding with language models, but now we have agents, and agents are reputable and acceptable pieces of software to use to create code. So we are doing agent coding. So the original Taco was built, I think, using GPT 4-ish, 4.0 maybe, a long time ago. Had some, and by all means, go back and dig out the episode in which I talk about this, had some serious architectural problems. As a piece of kit, it was fine. It did what it was supposed to, but the moment I wanted to add anything to it, it just got more and more bloated, loads of technical debt. It was horrible. And I went and dug around in it and found some absolute horror show code and decided it would be quicker and easier to rebuild it from scratch using an agent. And there we had OCAT, which the observant among you might have noticed is just TACO backwards, because I reverse engineered TACO. Mm-hmm. I just wrote a new prompt and really did it off the back of pretty much one prompt and then some iterations. And that was much better, much more robust, and much more fully featured. And I've been building on that over and over to get a client that I really liked in terms of what it did and what it offered me. And we can go in a bit into that. But then same problem arose. Actually, it was taking a good 30 seconds to boot up. So I was like, this doesn't seem right to me. So I went in, dug around in the code a bit, and then found that it was doing some horror show stuff, some really, really ugly, stupid, bad design decisions, bad code. Not all of it. There's some good stuff in there, but the subsequent iterations, because I wasn't particularly systematic about how I implemented them and monitored the code quality, was again really bad. And so here we have. Literally, I think, when were we talking? Like Wednesday? Mm-hmm. Or Tuesday, must have been something like that this week, which I decided basically on the fly I was going to rebuild OCAT. and then I got off the call with you, Pete, and I started rebuilding it then, right?
Yeah.
So that was earlier this week, and we're now on Friday, and we have the first working version, and that's where
so we're now into Kato, I believe.
Yes, so we have Kato, which is, you might have observed, another anagram of the word taco. And so we've calculated that I still got ACOT if we need to rebuild again, or COAT, I noticed we can do, before we get into, I think, the grammatically incoherent versions. So there we go. Yeah, it's good. And Kato, and I need to staple that name in my brain so I actually say the right thing, is functional. We have a first working 0.1.0, which is functional if a little bit buggy and throwing the odd error, and I haven't properly UAT'd all the functionality, but it's a working piece of software, and it looks pretty neat, and it's up on GitHub.
Great. So before we dive into the story of how you've developed that and some of the things you've done, I really do think we should contrast with previous starting points. But it's up and running. Does it feel slow? Do you feel like it's already better, or is the jury still out at this point?
So we'll come back to the user experience. The user experience is roughly a clone. I say roughly, it's actually almost a clone of OCAT. So there's nothing new, really. And I dropped some functionality out. The speed is fine. In fact, I'd say it takes about 2 seconds to boot up, although I think that's still too slow. I'm slightly suspicious of that, so I'll probably go in and have a look at that at some point. But it's better than 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I know exactly why. I know exactly why OCAT was taking so long to boot up, is because the stupid ass design decision, it had to literally mirror the whole vector store in a Python variable in memory and then not use it. It didn't even use it. It was amazing. And so it was ridiculously, needlessly slow, but there was bits and pieces like that everywhere. It was horrible. Very, very bad.
So have you gone in and checked that copying of the vector store isn't in Kato?
You know what? I haven't. But well, in my defence, on any further questions you've got like that, the first version of this that was functional was this morning, right? Yeah, so if there might be all sorts of code smells in there, but not yet. Now, I was explicit in the specs that you're not allowed to do that, but I've already spotted some stuff that I told. Well, I've only spotted stuff that I told it to do, which it didn't. I've not spotted any stuff that I told it not to do, but it has. So we'll find out, and maybe we'll do an update on this next week. But so far, so not too bad.
Okay, well, that's good. So, well, let's dive in at the process side of things and how you got here. So, as you said, I think the original taco, I think you had a single spec, as it were, maybe a few coding prompts, you know, like code like this, don't do that. But this time around, you've taken a much more, shall we say, specification orientated approach. And I think part of that is because you already had, well, you knew what you wanted already, right? Because you've already been using something for 9 months. So if I had said to you, well, as we sort of did at the beginning of the week, well, what is it you want? Then you can immediately list off, you know, 25 things just off the top of your head.
So this method of working that we'll discuss didn't really meaningfully exist. And I don't think, I mean, we were veering towards it at the point where I started building Taco. But had I just started this whole enterprise now with Taco right now, I don't think I would have been able to do it how I've done it. The one of the main reasons I was able to be so prescriptive here is because I knew exactly what I wanted, and I only really figured out what I wanted by figuring out what I didn't want. Mm-hmm. So I could have gone and tried out a whole ton of other chat clients and sort of, you know, got the best and the worst out of that and created a spec from that. But I'd rather be like figuring out, you know, vibe coding and, you know, agent coding and experimenting and doing some actual stuff rather than, you know, just poring over other people's work. But I think there's a lot to be said about how I've approached this here, but I would caveat that with, I didn't know what I wanted. And the reason I could be so specific is because I've been using it and I was like, yeah, this is pretty close, right? Well, it's pretty close as a sort of a base functional app to do what I want. And I kept on wanting to add more things to it, which became prohibitively difficult because of poor architectural decisions. But I don't remember doing any, I think that Taco was sort of prompted conversationally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know if I've got any evidence of how I actually did it. What I do, Taco, strictly speaking, was the second iteration. The first iteration was just a single Python file, right? Which was a very basic chat interface, effectively an orchestrator of API calls in a sort of session-like manner. I've got that somewhere still. And of course I got to that and was like, oh, this actually works, but I'm never going to be able to iterate on just a single code file. You know, that's just not a clever thing to do. So I think pretty much immediately I said, okay, make it work like this, but turn it into a Python library. And then it all sort of got out of control from there.
Yeah, ballooned from there. Yeah. But I think that quite reflects how things progress anyway, you know, especially in the sort of world we're in, where first of all, you know, you're looking at solving problems and you don't even know if there is a solution because you're looking at data, you're trying to suss out, are there patterns here? Is there something useful? And then maybe out of that falls the idea that there is something there and, you know, there are patterns in the data and therefore we want to create something that surfaces those patterns via, dare I say it, things like dashboards or any other tool, you know, moving forward. And so, you know, we work in a, first of all, experiment for ourselves. Can I find anything? Yes, I found something. Okay, can I build something which demonstrates the value of that? then you have to demonstrate that to someone. Then you get the go ahead to say, yes, this is going to be useful. Then you get the age old discussion of, yeah, but what we built will only run on my machine and won't go anywhere else. You've got the sort of transition of thinking of proof of concept to something which will run, which is generally in a pilot. And so you enter this kind of murky world of, well, you need some form of SLA and some sort of productionization there, but actually it's only going to a team of five for the next 6 months. So how long do we want to spend on that? Sure, you know, we don't want it breaking every 5 minutes, but at the same time, it's not going to an IT, you know, overnight call team. So, you know, then you get that sort of gray world of a strong prototype. And then once that works, yeah, now we want to roll it out to the company. You've got 5,000 people using it. It's like, well, now we need to get into the serious, proper code, you know, and a code base and good support. And that kind of reflects what you're talking about. You know, start with a single Python file. Say, okay, well, let's throw that into a library. Okay, let's start adding things to it. You've been through prototyping, so now you know what you need. And it's almost, this is almost emulating that stage of going from strong prototype to a much more industrialized type product, which is going to, you know, support what it does, you know, in a much more robust fashion and enable future upgrades and future fixes to happen, maybe not easily, but certainly without having to unpick thousands of lines of spaghetti code. So it feels quite realistic. But it's definitely worth that caveat, because it now puts you in that position of having used the tool. You know what you want, what you don't want, what you can sacrifice. The knowing what you don't want, 30-second boot ups, etc., is quite useful. And so that's your starting point with time.
To build on that, I mean, I've basically, although it wasn't necessarily my intention, gone on the journey that I think is going to be fairly standard for any type of software development, well, any type of new software development from here on. Because, I mean, back in the day, I mean, you talk about the fact that, you know, I wouldn't know what I wanted. So I prototyped it. Well, I sort of did. I sort of accidentally prototyped it. I never intended to have to build Kato, yet here we are. But like, you know, you wanted, you know, I presided over the big sort of enterprise build of big enterprise websites with apps and e-commerce and stuff on it. And you, in the client, and as a client, you know, you do turn up with, well, here's what I want, right? It's a website. Here's the flows, or you work with a sort of UX designer on creating the flows, and here's what happens if you do X. Here's what happens if you do Y. You know, it's probably even more important, you know, these days when you're building out sort of, you know, mobile apps and stuff. And so there's an extent to which you know, before you put any lines of code down, you may have mocked up some HTML, but most of it's done, you know, in design software or whatever, something like Canva these days. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, it's a sort of fait accompli. You turn up with what you want, and then that gets built. Now, we all know there's some nuance there, but ultimately that's been the process. But there's absolutely no godly reason why you would take that risk anymore, right? Because how many times have you know either been on the receiving end or the providing end of a spec that got delivered basically to spec, and then you've gone, no, not like that. You know what I mean? That's not quite right. Actually, now I think about it, now we're actually using it, or now we've unleashed it on the customers and they can't make head nor tail of it. And I just don't think you would do that anymore. If you wanted, yeah, you want your new website, dear ChatGPT, dear Claude, please build me a new website. Take my current website as a template. And you're not going to build out all the back end. You're not going to do it all on your CMS. You're just going to build the experience, or you're going to build a bare bones knock up of the app you want before you go into the full development. You know, it won't be scalable. It'll be single user, blah, blah, blah. This is what we do, right?
Yeah,
but I think that would have been considered slow and expensive in most use cases. Whereas now, if you're not doing it, you've got to be sacked. You know what I mean? Try out everything first, because there's absolutely no reason why you wouldn't. And so that's roughly where I've got to. I don't think me going into this going, well, I need a a chat client with these basic principles, but don't really know what I want. So I'm just going to build any old shit and see how we get going. And I think that's going to be standard, right? It has to be. This is the only logical way of doing things.
Excellent. So you had a good idea of what you wanted. So what was step one, I guess? Well, where did you end up starting this time?
Well, I just wanted a working version of OCAT. So the first step was I went into the OCAT repo and I said to, I can go through the various models that I used. I probably won't remember exactly, but I'm using, most of this was done via Warp Terminal. I went into the OCAT repo and just simply told Claude, I think it was Claude 4.5 Opus, just write down the functional specs for OCAT, right? Mm. Literally, here's the repo. Write me, reverse engineer the functional specs. I think it was less like a line, two sentences, right? Basically, write the functional specs as you see them. Don't put any technology stuff in there, right? No technical specs, no technology stuff. Or unless absolutely necessary, because you need that for the functionality, right? So it needed to tell me that we needed a vector store, right? So there were bits of tech in there, but most of it was purely functional, and it did that pretty quickly. Sort of go in there and look at what it's written and go, well, at this point, there'd been some development on OCAT that were very me experimenting, right? So I wonder if I could make it do this thing. And what if I had that? It'd be really amazing if I had this bit of functionality. And then I have no reason. I just go, right, just build that. And then you get it and you think, oh, no, that's crap. But you don't do anything with that. You just leave it in there. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was a load of stuff like that in there that it just documented diligently. And I just went in there and started deleting it. And then like, oh, you've missed the command line interface. You've missed this, you've missed that. So just, keep iterating over that purely in OCAT until I'm like, yeah, this is pretty close to what I want. I'm going to delete this, 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 and this. And that then create a new repo called Kato, because I decided at that point it was obviously going to be called Kato. Create a project folder in there, put the technical specs in there, and that was it. That's my seed, as it were, that was going to grow the tree that is Kato. And when you think about it, it's really sweet because... there's not a lot I wanted to change about OCAT. There's one stuff I want to build on it. I want it to be better. I want it to be faster. I want it to be more intelligent. But, functionally, the core of it was, this is right. This is what I want. It's working really well for me. So getting it to build out that functional spec was just so nice. And then, I sort of got halfway through this build of Kato, thinking to myself, what if this is all shite? Right. And then remembering, well, actually, no, I've got the functional specs, right? As long as I keep those tight, and it will be part of the process to add new functionality, the functional specs will all be updated and kept up to date at all times, right? Mm-hmm. So that if I then go to build, what did we decide? Coat. I'll call it the next one Coat, maybe. Yeah. Or maybe I'll just actually give it a dot release. Who the fuck knows? But I can literally start a new repo, stick the technical spec, functional specs in there, and get it to have another shot, right? Yeah. And maybe be a bit more prescriptive around the technical specs. But it was as simple as that, really. That was where it all started. And this was, what, Wednesday or something?
Yeah, so I'm just looking now in the repo. So under the spec, and this is under the functional folder, yeah? So I think there are like 10 or 12 markdown files in there. I've just got one open, which is the command line interface. It gives an overview, goals, entry points, modes.
And so for anyone listening, this is a public repo, and it's on GitHub. Alex M. Lovelace is my profile. Just go and have a look. But do not judge me. Please.
Yeah. So
just
You're just a man.
just a lowly developer.
It's a few hundred lines long, you know, nicely laid out in Markdown with different headings. It's even got things like behavior details in there. And then the next one's the spec for the command system, similar sort of thing. Talks about framework, the reference, commands available, you know, so very readable by a human. Breaks down the details of each command. And this covers, you know, the help system. There's an overview in there. I don't know if it wrote that or whether you got it to then summarize all the other files on top of that, but there's an overview file.
So yes, I did. Well, I had my own overview, but it wrote its one. And its one was better. And I think that was part, I think it, whether or not it would have thought to do it anyway, I was like, check your shit, basically. Go over this and then go through and check it all. And then that was the last thing it did. So it was pretty neat. And those files are well structured. They're consistent. There were inconsistencies in there. Some of them, I think, were my fault because my, you know, OCAT was a bit of a mess. Some of them, I think, were just, you know, LLMs doing their slightly flaky thing, right?
Yeah. And did you actually sort of read through each one and make corrections, or were you happy that?
Yes. Okay, yes, cool. But I wasn't very consistent, knowing full well I was going to get a model to do a full cross-check. Right. So necessarily, there's a file on the configuration. So it's file-based config. Necessarily, there's a specification for that. But then you want to say, in the one for the, chat client behavior, the UI behavior. Oh, if you see, configuration X, then it does this. Right. So that there needed to be consistency between the files because there was always cross referencing. So I didn't bust my balls to get that correct because I'm like the worst person in the world for that. Right. You don't ask me to do that. And so I then, once I was pretty clear that the main areas of functionally were as I wanted them to be, as far as I could tell, I went and got it to a cross-reference, at which point it you know, dug up a bunch of inconsistencies, which we just fixed one at a time.
Right, okay. So that was your next step. So it fixes those. What happened next? Because I see there's a technical folder. Was that the next?
Yeah, so I was really uncharacteristically organized on this and disciplined, because I think I learned a lot about what I wanted from this client over the last, you know, whatever that's been, 9 months or something. But I learned much more about like agent coding, and you start to, you know, it's not different from your intern. You know what I mean? Like if you give your intern minimal information, then they will do a minimal job, right? And I sort of, after a couple of iterations, the first, you know, with Taco, like basically sod all. With OCAT was like a massive several page brain dump, but it wasn't well organized. It wasn't very clear. It was probably inconsistent. There probably was some contradictions and stuff in there. And I guess my last couple of years working with LLMs, the number one no-no is fucking contradictions, right? I even got told off by Ada at one point for fucking contradictions, right? In fact, I've probably been told off many times because the way I talk and the way I write is I caveat everything. And to a model, that sounds like contradictions, right?
Okay.
And you've got lots of sort of conditions and stuff in there. And so you've either got to be really explicit and clear with your nuances and caveats, or just don't have them, right? Mm. A lot of the time it's not necessary, or you can tweak later on. But when you've got, I mean, there's many thousands of lines of specifications there. And so it really was important to be really thorough to make sure that there was minimal room for confusion, or, you know, because where there's confusion, they have to be interpretative, right? Yeah. And they won't always ask questions, should I say. And so, the first phase was get the functional specs. I mean, this is not different from a normal coding practice, right? Get the functional specs pretty much down first, and then I got it to build the technical specs. And it's sort of, the thing is, the way that I got to build the functional specs was in quite a modular fashion. What I did in between is my usual go out for a walk. I literally went out for an hour's walk with my headphones on and dictated all the stuff that wasn't in there already. Like, what was my intent? Why did I do what I did? What are my thoughts about X and Y? What didn't work? What did work? And sort of what my expectations were. I could have just typed it all down. I just prefer to be walking around the beautiful Scottish countryside. And so there was a whole bunch of sort of philosophy and stuff. And this is what I really learned. There was a really good, you introduced me to that podcast episode on, what's the name of the Vanishing Gradients.
Yeah, that's the one.
They did a really, really good episode with a couple of experts on agentic coding, and they were really big on saying intent is really important. And actually, looking back, I still don't think it's quite as clear as I would like it to be still, but intent is really important. Explain why you're doing what you're doing so that the machine can make educated guesses if it needs to, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of that. There's a big, in fact, that the transcription of that brain dump is in there in the notes folder, so you can see exactly what I said there. And it was, I got it to go through that, make any updates to the functional spec based on that, and then to start and extract anything valid for the technical spec from that. Mm-hmm. And then that sort of gave me then the next iteration, which was now go build the technical spec. And the good thing about this point is that you've got that solid sort of nut of a starting point with the functional spec, because you're using that as your Bible, as it were, like you can write the functional spec, go, look, well, this is all wrong. Delete. Let's start again. Here's what you got wrong. So here's how we're going to do it this time, right? Mm, I didn't have to. And also, because it's been broken down modularly anyway, it was very naturally just modularly, doing the technical spec as well. So they are completely matched, but they follow a similar pattern.
Yeah. And what I like about this as well, I mean, it takes me back to various development processes I've come across over the year. One of them is user stories. I particularly like the fact that you've just asked a model to go in and look at code of something you've been using for 6 months and, you know, write out some specs. It would be an easy next step to then say, well, and can you put these into official user stories, you know, which is a way of saying, as a user, you know, title of user, I want to state capability in order to, you know. And so I could easily see that you could say to a model with that background and then say, right, okay, build those user stories. And then they can get used to plan projects, to help cajole the sort of user community, you know, product owner, all this sort of stuff. So although you didn't do that step, I could see that you could use this technique, but it doesn't have to be just sort of a fairly informal spec document. Yeah, you could get it to hone those in any way you wanted. I mean, really, for you here, obviously, it's about recording something and making sure the machine can then work with it to create tech specs. there's no reason why you can go that further step into the user world and create a whole bunch of stories in their language and all that. I mean, it's a prototype you're already using. Do you know what I mean? I think that's
And it's a good point, right? So if I had to start from scratch, I mean, maybe I'll build a different app. Maybe I'll build a new app that does something totally different, which I don't have any starting point for. So where do I start? What is the best practice here? And I don't actually know. Are user stories good for models? And off the top of my head, I'm not sure, actually. I don't really know, right? So I'd be interested to know, either we can experiment or maybe someone's done some work here. But I think you'd still jump from user stories to, and I don't think this is what you're suggesting, but you get your user stories down because perhaps that's an easier way for you to express what you want. You're still going to build functional specs, right? What's good about that is that one of the good things, it's a double-edged sword, but one of the most powerful things about language models is, they know about stuff that you might not know about, right? So as opposed to saying, well, I want a button here and I want to scroll there and I want this there and that, you're sort of like, well, no, this is my end game, right? What's best practice for getting there, right? And just let it give you some examples. And it was really handy for that because, I mean, it's not quite the same thing, but I was like, well, I want to – it put a pretty bare-bones welcome message. I was like, nah, we've got to go a bit more glitzy than this. This is Kato, mate. I want a proper welcome message. But I just said, well, give me a few options. I gave it almost no instruction. I just need some information about, what profile and models and stuff are running for this session. And then I just want some pretty pictures, right? So give me some options, right? And that's immediately like, well, I didn't have to tell it how to do it. I don't really know what the breadth of what's available on, how that might be done or whatever. I just let it do it for me. And so there's a lot that can be done there in terms of sort of, controlling the behaviors that you want to get to, but letting the model, do some of that research for you. I was sort of almost at the brink of calling it be creative for you because it actually just isn't. But what it will do is say, well, here's a few different versions of what best practice looks like. Yeah. Right? What you're not going to get is it doing something really radical. Right. So if what you need is something really radical, I wouldn't use a model for that. But if what you want to know is, what are my options? What ways do people usually do something like this? What's best practice? What's well tested? And it's really good for that. So I think that transition from user stories to functional specs is, I think that's really good, right? I think it should be good. The only question for me is whether user stories is the right way to do that for a model.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah. Okay, so you get the technical specs written out, you've done some intent recording, you've kind of got it to cross-reference and question itself, do some reviews, updated them. What happens next?
So first thing was a highly critical code and architecture review. So I think up to that point I only used Claude 4.5 Opus. So I had Claude, a new session, Claude do a write a report. So the report should be in there under reports. I think it's under reports, I'll put it. Be as brutal as you can. I then went and got GPT 5.2 high reasoning to do the same. That's also in there. And then I got one or other of them to do the synthesis of two. I could have got more models to do it, but at that point I was like, it's going to be overkill because actually they didn't say much that was different. Got it to pull out the major concerns. And then you'll see there's an annotated version of the summary. I literally went in there and wrote my notes in there, right? Yeah. And most of it, when I sort of got to the bottom, was just simply agreed, 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 agreed.
Yeah.
And then there was some notes to say, I don't really know what you mean. Give me some examples. So when I then got, I think most of what I did from the next chunk was with GPT 5.2 because it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I knew there was less reasoning to be done. So I got it to review my review and then come back with any questions, sort of triaged any open things, gave it some direction on some stuff that was less clear. I think I just need to check the folder again. I think I did another one after that, a much more extensive architectural level review, looking for problems with how it's engineered. And so bear in mind, I put no code down here, right? There's no code been written. That's strictly speaking not true. There's code examples all through the technical specs, right? And I did I eyeballed the technical specs. I did not read these top to bottom. What I did then, my final thing was, I just sat there and grilled it for like 2 hours. How do I do this? What does the install process look like? How is it going to be tested? How do I ensure that the, you know, what's your strategy for testing the document store or whatever, right? The vector store. What does the install process look like? Why did you do this? You know, why have you said that? Why did you make that decision? And I made a few changes off the back of that, and like made the decision to use UV as the build tool. Mm-hmm. Cause I think it was originally just using pip. OCAT uses Poetry, which I found a bit clunky. And that's handling environment and stuff like that. And so I was like, you know, and what does this look like, and how do we deploy, and what's the deployment process? And then you sort of go through, you get answers, and every time you're like, update that in the documentation. The agents.txt is pretty explicit about what needs to be done every time you make a change, but I just don't trust it. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, remember to put this in. The thing for me is I want to have to tell it twice. If I tell it to do something and it hasn't logged it somewhere, and that's something means a later iteration, I forget to tell it, and then suddenly it's gone off on a tangent because of this one piece of information it was missing.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I've also kept, I think I've kept exhaustive session logs. So there's a sessions folder that has I believe that's every chat I had with during this process, during the build process, up until I actually started building. And that also includes all of the back end stuff that the models were doing. It was all done in Warp Terminal.
And I was going to say, so how do you pull those sessions out? So you're using Warp Terminal, what people might use, you know, Claude, or I'm always a fan of being in Cursor or something like that. You get the conversations come up on the side, but you've already set up Warp that automatically saves those, or do you have to?
No, there might be a way of doing it automatically, but I just get to the end of it. I mean, really weirdly disciplined for me. It's just very, very odd.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just do export conversation, and then I just copy them all to that folder. There's probably a better way of doing it in Warp. I've no doubt that there's a workflow in the other tools, but it was sort of a minor point for me. These chat files are huge because it includes all the code scans and stuff that Warp was doing. So I don't really think they're in the best form, but, you know, I don't want to dick around with that at this point.
This is something that is quite interesting because I certainly find myself, you know, I have these chats, I'm trying to get get it to do something, it does it, and then it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, see, you know, don't need that anymore. Yeah, which is fair enough. You know, I've got the piece of functionality I want, you know, let's move on. But also, I've done a few projects where the models go back through very large logs, exactly like this. And of course, what we know is they're pretty good at pulling detail out. And even though I sort of already knew that, I think actually seeing it in action and then thinking about my own workflow was, you know, I sort of vaguely put two and two together. And so I think this idea of saving your your conversations is actually quite good. It's not anything you're really going to go back and look at yourself. But remember, you've got a model here and you can go and say, I'm sure I asked this question, you know, go and look for where we had a discussion. Now you've got, you know, 20 odd discussions in here. You know, you were, you know, over 2 or 3 days, you know, you've had that discussion at some point. In no system that we've had up till now are we ever finding that, you know, we've all done this in the past, but now you can actually say, you know, well, we'll summarize the conversation on Tuesday morning, or how many times did I ask a question around this subject? And it's going to be good
Why did I make that decision? Why did we decide to do it that way? I mean, that's the biggest one. Even code that you wrote on your own, no one else had any influence on it. You literally did that. And then you go back to it a month later and you go, why is it doing that? Actually, it turns out there was some weird constraint and, you know, it wasn't the best way to do it, but it was the only way you could have done it given that constraint. And it's like, but you just don't remember. And it's that sort of stuff. So you don't waste time going, well, let's engineer that out because that looks stupid. And then realizing, no, it has to be done that way. And I've done that so many times.
Yeah. And what I love about these things is they put out a really sane conversation thread from stuff, you know, I mean, sometimes it's so sane. I think, is that really what's in there? You know, I've started trusting them more and more because they do seem good. And also it's something which, I mean, yeah, so you've got a check that you can go and do it. It's pulled out this strand of the conversation, you know, and I found it here. So you can go back and check and then go, okay, well, that's not how I read it, but I understand why you'd say that. Or you go, yeah, that's quite good. Or why you actually wanted it is because, you know, it's just something at the back of your mind which is trying to connect two dots. The moment you see that, you think, oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Oh, it's because of this. All right, yeah. And in fact, I've not written that down. And then you go and, you know, and you say to, oh, make sure you include this. So, you know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, it comes back to the whole accuracy thing. It doesn't always have to be 100% accurate. But the fact that it can pull it out and do it so eloquently, so quickly, off such a large, you know, amount of writing, you know, is really making me think. I mean, even just this week, I've been thinking, okay, well, you know, it's just almost worth, you know, writing what you've done during the day or dictating, okay, what did I do today? Well, I did this, I did that, did the other. And just whack it in a file, because if I want it in 3 months to say, okay, well, what were you doing in the weeks of January? You know, give it to me in 30 words. It's going to summarize it in 30. Give me 10 bullet points or give me 10 bullet points, you know, or I might not look at it at all. But it just suddenly feel like, well, that could well be useful in 6 months or a
year.
Well,
it's funny you should say that, because that's one of the reasons that Cato exists at all, right? Because I wanted full control, and I knew what if I had one place where I could do things like manage my to-do lists and stuff, and have chats with, you know, because these days, you know, very rarely use search. I'll just go into a chat client and ask some questions there, and then validate it if I need to. And it's like, well, already I want to keep that information. I want to keep it. And I, you know, I have the skills to be able to use that and to do stuff with it. I don't want it to just disappear in the ether into, you know, OpenAI or Anthropic. I want control over that. And I want to be able to go back and see what I was doing and saying at a point in time, right? So all this is time stamped and everything like that. And I don't really care that it's not stored away in a, you know, a relational database with, you know, normalized and stuff. I just want it stored somewhere. And as long as it's in a vector store, I've at least got some chance of finding stuff again.
Yes.
You know, fuzzy searching it out, right? I you know, that's part of the reason why all this exists. I think the other thing here, I mean, and we've been sort of dancing around this for 2 years plus now, you know, if you ask ChatGPT what date was Barack Obama born, right? You know, it might get it right. Right. It might not. Whereas And that's problematic, and I can see why people struggle a little bit. But when really it's just feeding off your own data, and we used to call this RAG, right? It's now feeling like a really antiquated term. You know, yes, it's going to make some mistakes, but this is your stuff here. You've got the files, right? And if you're suspicious about something, just go look. Right. Yeah. You know, this is your library. This is your stuff. And so, you know, there's a level of control there and autonomy. You know, you might not remember everything you said, but I know the sort of things I would be saying. So if the model starts saying, you know, I was talking, saying a bunch of fascist stuff, I'll be like, well, I probably wasn't. It's not something I tend to do. So go look again, or go and look for myself. Why would it think that I did that? And I think, you know, I think that's really valuable. Partly, you know, it's why Cato exists. It's not just, I mean, I can get, you know, ChatGPT, client on the phone's perfectly serviceable. I mean, in fact, it's actually good, and I still use it from time to time, mainly because none of the versions of this app, the app formerly known as OCAT, really properly functional on mobile. So if I'm out and about and just need a quick search, I'll just use the ChatGPT app, which is decent. I mean, it's fine, but you know, it's all just going off into the ether, and I'm feeding, you know, Sam Altman's knowledge machine.
Yes, yeah, indeed. Okay, well, getting back to this, and so you've been through recording sessions. At what point are there any more steps that you took before saying go code, and then what did that look like? Was that bit at a time, or what was the approach there?
No, I mean, it was, there was a case of, you know, what have I forgotten, and just sort of throwing random things out, going, done this, done that. I poked around the edges for a bit, and I was like, got to the point where I don't know what else I was asked. And at that point you're like, well, what else do I do, right?
Yeah,
I thought, fuck it. I mean, there's just so little you know, real barrier to just doing it. So yeah. I actually switched down to Claude 4.5 Sonnet.
Yeah.
Well, a combination of that and GPT 5.2 for the coding bit. And I just went, well, actually, no, sorry, there was one more step. I got it to build a plan, a coding plan. So okay. The first coding plan built by GPT 5.2 was shite. So I had Claude build one, and then I think I basically tag teamed them doing it. So essentially, right, scanned it, made sure that had the right post change hooks in there to do the right things, update the right things, a process of checking into Git, and, you know, writing messages and stuff. And so just a sort of, I think it's like a 7-point process to do every time: create a branch, make your changes, test them, run these tests, blah, 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 check it into Git with a message and so on.
Right.
That whole process could be made way more robust, but because this was a first iteration, a first version, there's only so far you can go with fully formed, test-driven delivery processes and stuff, because half the functionality isn't there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it had to do quite a lot of coding before any of it would work. So there were some certain jumping-off points that it had put in there. There was an MVP, the first working version, sort of about halfway through that process. It seemed like a sensible process, so I just set it going, and I think I got the MVP about an hour later. Right. But I have it stop at the end of every phase. So I did a phase delivery plan.
Yeah,
it was all relatively sensible. Yeah. There's not much I can check, but it's a more, you know, if I wasn't directly watching it, because I was watching the traitors on TV while it was doing it. Right. I, you know, just go in there and make sure it's not gone nuts for some reason. But there's only so much you can do. I'm not going to go through the code. I'm just checking to make sure it hasn't gone off the rails and done something weird. Which it hadn't. And then I got to the MVP. It was, you know, it's like, hey, MVP, you can now start it up, in which case I did, and it all for an error. So at that point, it told me at MVP, I hadn't even tested it to run it. So I tested it, didn't work, and then iterated around it to get that working, and then just set it off, because from then it would just test everything. So it wouldn't come back to me until it had a working version of it. I think 14, 15 phases between last night and this morning. And it just worked. I mean, there's errors and stuff. There's a few problems, a few things that it did. I was like, yeah, it's not so good. But it took me no time to fix it. There's still a few random warnings and stuff. And every piece of functionality I've tested so far works.
Right.
I need to see if the vector store components and the memory are working. But I need to sort of drum up a bit of test data for that. And there's loads of bits and pieces in there. It's got a pretty extensive help. So one of the big things for me was that the help functionality worked. So one of the things I sort of messed up with OCAT was that the help files, the in-app help files were terrible. I started trying to plumb in natural language commands, and it just made everything so complicated and unreliable. So I scratched all that out, but it did mean, and also I didn't want to stuff the whole context with all the information about the app. So it's not a very cognizant app, but you can just feed the whole help file in there. There's a command to just feed the whole help file into your context, so you can ask the model questions about it. So I only feed in that stuff when I can't find what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So there's lots of little things like that in it, but I've not tested everything.
Yeah.
But it works as a general chat client.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking, so it's created, I mean, as you'd expect, it's created, you know, folders in a modular fashion based on the sort of specking. So, you know, you've got commands, folder, core, display, providers, resources, services, etc. And then within those, you know, there are maybe anything from sort of 2 to 10 code modules, just jumping in one randomly. I mean, they're actually quite neat, you know, usually, you know, 50 to a couple of hundred lines, nothing I've seen, which is like, oh my God, 2000 lines or anything. So, you know, really broken out.
So that was deliberate.
Yeah.
So I told that it needed to be aggressively modular, right?
Yeah.
But not necessarily everywhere. But it's like lean on the side of aggressive modular. And whether or not that's best practice these days, I haven't got a bloody clue. But my point was like the things like that, there's the whole slash commands interface. Literally, if it has slash something, it's going to do something, local, right? Not something with the model. It's not part of the conversation. And so there's quite a few of those for managing lists and, just to getting help for whatever. There's all sorts of things in there, querying the vector store and stuff like that. The most likely dev task that I'm going to want to do that isn't bug fix is add new commands. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, but what I don't want is for the models to have to fish around in a 10,000 line long code file with every single command. You know what I mean? Keep it as modular as possible so that the minimum amount of context is taken up when dev is needed to be done on the parts of the code base that are likely to see the most traction, right?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the front end and the command structures and stuff like that. So I told it to be very, very modular. Feels to me like that's best practice as far as a model's concerned, but I'm sure someone will tell me otherwise.
It's interesting. I mean, I always find, modular code's really great to, look at each individual module, because it's, as I'm seeing here, it's relatively simple. Everything in that module relates to, what that module's about. And so you get that sort of, separation of concerns. It's quite easy to go in and, and then also it's quite easy to quickly identify, code that's just, not really doing much, but it's just there because it's catching errors and that sort of stuff. The only time I find it's more tricky is, when you're trying to follow a flow, because you're jumping across sort of like 19 different modules and just having to open the next one, go over this. It was doing come back again, you know. So I find, you know, personally, I find it quite tricky. But again, I think this is something which models have no issue about, right? Just jumping from one to file to another is, you know, not a problem. The fact that
so there's a lot about signposting here. So yeah. There's README files all over the place. The sort of core agents.txt file contains, you know, paths to all the major areas. If you want to change this, go here, change that, go there. And as you drill down, and I've not gone through and checked this, and this all probably needs being made a bit more robust, but, you know, essentially you should be able to get into one of these subdirectories, functional subdirectories, go into a README file and then say, oh, I want to make a change to particularly this bit. Oh, okay, so that's that particular file. Right. And so that the structure itself is making it much more navigable, which is roughly how a programming language like Python is designed anyway. Python kind of is built to have that level of modularization. It can make life harder if you don't have the signposting, because then it needs to, you know, go through loads more files, could get more confusing to the model. What my point was is that, you know, if you're adding a new command, and that's a really simple thing, you know, it's a very simple command or whatever, or changing an existing command, it should be jump into the agents.txt, jump into the README file at the root of that, jump straight into the relevant file, right? Mm-hmm. And that file, if it's short, means you haven't put much in the context, it's cost you less money, and it will get right to the point, and it will be a much simpler dev task. And so it's having those signposts throughout the code base and not having to scan the whole code base, right? I mean, that's the disaster, you know, even though the context lengths are insane these days, what you don't want is a code base this big to be scanned into the context just to make a change to the text on your welcome screen. You know what I mean?
One of the things I saw that's in here is it's created a change log as well. So I presume that after each phase, you're getting it to write to this change log, and it's just, you know.
Actually, no. So it created that at the end.
Okay.
So that's really for the benefit of the end user. There was a progress log in the project directory that it was using to keep tabs of its progress. And so bear in mind that here's what happened. I use Warp. I have something like 2,500 Warp credits. I'd used up 2,250 of those on the planning alone, because I used the more expensive models.
Yeah.
I got through the remaining 250 a lot slower, because I used, one of the cheaper models, ran out of that. Right.
Yeah.
And so I then moved on to AMP, because I had some credits left in AMP that I'd bought in there ages ago, fivers worth in there. Went through, burned all those up. So I was like, got to the end of the task. I was like, go over to AMP, right, phase 10, AMP, get on with phase 10. So it just goes on, because the implementation plan and the specs are so prescriptive, it just got on with it, right? There was nothing, it didn't need to orientate itself. It was as if it was the same model. And then I ran out of AMP tokens, because that's really, really expensive.
Yeah.
And then I tried Kiro, which is, I think, the Amazon one, because that gives you some free credits. And that threw, first thing I tried to do was to attach a code file so I could get it to do something, and it threw a user interface error. So I was like, yeah, right, whatever, I'm not going to bother with that. Shut it down immediately. Went straight on to Claude code. I had $10 worth of Claude code tokens in my API account, burned through those, and I actually finished it in that last $10. So this was old money. It was money that was in there before.
Yeah.
So Claude was very cheap, very fast, very effective. Similar interface to AMP. Not such a dissimilar experience using Warp. And so all of that was done, jumping between, and I don't know what models Amp was using. Claude was using 4.5. So, you know, it was the same model as a lot of the other stuff was done.
Yeah.
I would have jumped to GPT, codex, I guess, yeah. Had I needed to. It blows my mind that I was able to do that, right?
Yeah.
Different agents with different orchestrations, different models, just pick up where you left off. And this is where the planning comes in, right?
That it
was so explicit what it needed to do next. Oh, no, this is just phase 10. Here's the things you do, right? And the code base was so well engineered and so clear, and the things like the intent and the signposting and all this stuff, it just got on with it, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, also, you're going to use NumPy style doc strings. You're going to use type hints everywhere. And so the consistencies throughout the code base, it's not just sticking in random other stuff. I've no doubt that we'll find stylistic inconsistencies in there. But, you know, if you're jumping between developers to do that, or we're 6 months ago trying to do it across multiple models, you know, I'm not sure this would have been possible. But just jumping between all those different things and just squeezing out the last 3 tokens here and the last, my saved up tokens over there, it was just like, I sort of found it quite satisfying, you know.
Yeah.
It's quite exciting.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's absolutely, that side of it, I think, absolutely is amazing. And like you say, because of the structure you've got, the fact that any of those models can come in and pick it up, you know, and I've experienced this a lot, you know, that they'll go through very large repos and, you know, pick up kind of what they need to do, you know, in a matter of, you know, seconds or minutes, you know, and you could be talking about hundreds of thousands of lines of code, and you know, and they get on it pretty quickly, which is always, I'm always sitting there thinking, yeah, you you got there much quicker than I did, you know. It's got to be the best code I've ever seen you write.
Maybe. I mean, certainly the quickest code I ever wrote.
Type in doc strings, I mean, come on.
Oh, I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's just making me look so bad. But, you know, I can be a agent coding ninja as well. I'm good with that. A code base that big, let's be clear, I could still find lots and lots of, you know, creepy crawlies in there, code smells of plenty, all sorts of problems. But, you know, getting a code base that big, it took me 3 days.
Yeah.
And that wasn't 3 days working in it full time.
No.
That was 3 days on and off when I could be arsed sitting in front of the TV. I just did it here and there. I mean, the lesson is clear for me, which is, you know, have process, do proper planning, right?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, get it right and get, you know, and just follow these fairly simple principles. The agents are just so good now and the models are so good.
Yeah.
That it's sort of, I don't want to say it's hard to go wrong, but, you know, 3 days, you know, 3 days of on and off and probably, you know, probably 8 hours of screen time is my guess.
Yeah. And I think what makes, you know, where my head's spinning is, you know, I'm very much thinking of the principles around the process. And I think you really underlined here that, you know, like writing out the specs, you know, is something which, you know, you think, oh, well, I'll go and write all this down. And it's like, well, yeah. I mean, obviously, you can talk it down either way. But I think the, as you said from that podcast, they were talking about, you know, start with a brainstorming doc, which is like, okay, I want it to do something. Just list out 10 things and then give it to a model and say, go, what do you think of this? And it is going to say, oh, what did you think of these things? And then next thing you know, you've gone from your 10-point list to, you know, 30-point list. And then you say, okay, yeah, I think that's everything I want. And then you say, okay, now produce, you know, like a proper specification document from this. And bam, it's there in 30 seconds. And you're thinking, well, that's actually pretty good. That looks like somebody professional wrote that. And like you say, then you really go, well, it's missing this. And, well, I wouldn't do it that way. And so it's actually the interaction with the model starting from maybe, you know, not much information. And part of, you know, the challenge in my own head is kind of looking at the things I do myself. And some of these things are things which you just think, oh, well, I have to do that. You know, well, I won't start on something, I don't really know what I really need to do there. And so in the back of your mind, you're thinking, oh, so there's quite a lot of work to get this going. And so then, you know, there's you know, barrier to get over. And I think these really lower that barrier. Cause it's like, well, if you've only got five things in your head, start with those five things and use the model at that point. And that doesn't, and that's, you know, that's not necessarily obvious, because you hear, oh yeah, let's use, you know, the model for coding. And, you know, actually what we spent at least half of this time talking about was getting the model to spec out, you know, not amount of code. And you think about the amount of work that people do, you know, there isn't coding. But there is something there where you've got to, using these models earlier into your own, in inverted commas, process. And I'm not sure that all of us, or many people even, are able to sort of analytically look at their own workflow and see it as a process. Do you know what I mean? And so you just think, oh, this is just stuff I do. You don't think of it as a process and, oh, well, let's intervene at this point. There's definitely value.
My recommendation here is, so you want now you've been inspired and you want a new app to manage your, you know, your football stats stuff.
Indeed.
Which we should do an episode on at some point for Shizzle. Yeah.
I have been developing it further.
Yeah, there you go. So let's just say you've got this thing, oh, it's got to do this, can't quite get my head around it. What we're going to do is we're going to get on the call, we're going to record it, and you're going to talk it through with me, and I'm going to ask you questions, and I go, but have you thought about this? You're going to do that, blah, blah, blah. And if you do it that way, are you sure it's going to do what you want? And like, you know, not everyone can do this with everyone, but if, you know, if you're stuck, then it's not a case of, you know, maybe you ask me some advice, you go off and decide what to do, and I just record it and then get the model to summarize that up. And then look at it again and go, well, okay, yeah, that was good, but this is not so good. I didn't want to do that. He was talking shit there. And just delete it out and then just keep iterating it. And these specs become a working document. But, you know, if starting is your difficulty, then all you've got to do is talk it out, right? Yeah. Record that conversation, transcribe it, and any further conversations you have. Because these are now, these will become absolutely essential, reference points. And that's why I left the transcription of my brain dump in the repo, right? Because I think, it's almost as valid as the code itself. And this sort of audit trail doesn't exist in software development, right? No. I mean, I'm not saying you can fucking record everything, and we've got the whole problem of water cooler conversations. But if you're having a chat about this and you come to some design decisions or whatever, and you haven't been recording it, then you're an idiot. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just record it.
Yeah.
It's just not hard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's just a bit of discipline, which something that... you seem to have done quite well on here on a new thing for you.
But I mean, imagine, you know, how I've grown. You know what I mean? You're like, my little boy's all grown up. He's actually applying indeed, discipline to her. I mean, it were really ridiculously uncharacteristic of me. And I will say this, if it wasn't for the fact that things are so good that I was able to do it that quickly, right? I found a bit of hyper-focus and a bit of enthusiasm. I had the time, so I just got on and did it. Had this taken me another day or two, would I have got to that point? Would I have got here where I am now? Or would I have sort of given up and got bored and gone on to something else, right? So, I take the compliment, but I think that it's also another upside, and how far we've come with this technology. And I think even in the last sort of 3 to 6 months, right, that someone like me can actually finish something.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Well, I will come back and maybe the next episode will be cussing out the models and how bad they are. But for now, it feels quite positive. Certainly, you've got a well specced out piece of work there. So even if you have to start again, you only have to start halfway point. And it sounds like it'll be a lot cheaper as well, just dumping the code out. So yeah, well, hopefully we'll come back. Next one we do, you'll be just as glowing. And if not, we'll definitely get some learning points from that either way.
Yeah, well, you know, a positive note for a otherwise absolutely horrific start to a new year. So, you know, they call me a ray of sunshine. I always like to bring a bit of light into people's lives, you know what I mean?
Yes, indeed. And now we'll see if Cato will do that for us.
Yes, indeed. Okay.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Alex. And yeah, have a good week.
See ya. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
The confusion matrix.